you guys. Once again, time for Tomes of Terror, my little book review show. Now, this book was another recommendation from one of you guys. I can't remember who it was because it was a while back that somebody recommended it. I had heard the author's name before, John Langan, but I had never read any of his stuff. So somebody recommended this book to me. I don't even remember what the context was, but I guess whoever like recommended that, they pretty much like know my taste because I really, really liked this a great deal. So this book first came out in 2013, and it's actually a short story collection. Some of the stories are like pretty short, but most of them are like novella length. So I think there's only 9 stories in here. There's like 2 that are really short, that are more like vignettes, but the rest of them are like pretty much novella length. And it's called The Wide Carnivorous Sky and Other Monstrous Geographies. Now, I will say that if you are really, really into weird fiction, particularly like Lovecraftian type stuff, then you haven't read this guy, then you will probably really, really dig it. Now, from the notes and stuff that I read and interviews and stuff with him that I read that were like at the end of this book, he's actually kind of in the same writer's circle and is friends with some other authors that whose books I've covered on this show previously, like Paul Tremblay, who I think I reviewed his book, The Cabin at the End of the World. He also read A Head Full of Ghosts, most famously, which I have read, but I don't think I've reviewed it yet. And he's also friends with Nathan Ballingrid, who wrote Wounds, which I believe I reviewed on here too. So he's kind of like in that circle. I believe his day job, quote unquote, is like a professor at a college. And that comes through very, very stridently in the writing. I really like, he has very elegant prose. Like, it's very elevated, but it's not pretentious. You know what I mean? It's actually quite beautiful. And I really do like, I don't know, I just really liked the rhythm of how he writes his stories. Now, so as I said, this is 9 stories. I will say pretty much, I really, really liked this a lot. Some of the stories obviously are better than others, or I liked more than others. The first story, the only criticism that I could give to this book, and this is very minor, is that I kind of wish that they had put this story like somewhere else in the book. I understand why they put it first, because this story, which is called Kids, is not even really a story. It's more like a vignette type of situation. And when I first read it, I mean, basically all that happens in it is there's a teacher and he's in his classroom and all of a sudden, like, all these kids come in who are not his students, like, are they're much younger, and they proceed to, like, eat him. So they're like zombies. Now, so I was just kind of like, okay, you know, but then when I read, because there's writer's notes at the end where he says, like, where the ideas for the story came from and, like, you know, what anthology it originally appeared in or what he wrote it for. I actually really like that. If you're an author that writes short stories or even if you write novels, keep in mind, like, other writers like me, I really do dig when writers put shit at the end where they say they got the ideas from, because that's like really interesting to me. I do it in my short story collections as well, and I like when other writers do it too. So this story, as short and seemingly plotless as it is, the story behind it was actually quite funny, because I didn't realize this, but the teacher who gets eaten by the kids in the story is actually a real guy, like a real writer named Jack Haringa. And apparently what ended up happening was that I think that, like, Jack Haringa was, like, in kind of, like, was depressed or whatever, and a bunch of his writer friends got together and said, let's cheer him up by writing a short vignette or short story about him getting killed, and we'll put it all on our blog. We won't say anything about it, but we'll all put the stories on our blogs, like, on the same day, so it'll, like, freak him out, but it's also kind of cheer him up. I'm like, that's kind of cool, because that seems like something that horror writers would do. And I thought that was kind of amusing. So that's so essentially that's what it was. So it was a bunch of different writers who wrote different ways, like short stories or vignettes about how this actual real life person, this writer, like bought the farm. Like, and they all posted them online like the same day as a surprise for him. And he thought it was very, very funny. And they actually collected all the books into a small little volume called Jack Haringa Must Die. So I thought that was like pretty hilarious. But yeah, so the first story, like I said, it's almost kind of like an appetizer, I guess. So again, I can see why they put it first. Now the next one, this one's very interesting. And like I said, this is what's kind of cool about this writer. And I'll definitely be checking out, a lot of people said he had another short story collection that came out before this one was actually really good as well. And he's written a novel You know, and he might have written a few more since then, but I'm not really sure. I'm just going because this came out in 2013, so I was reading the stuff like prior to that. But so the second one, he really likes to like experiment with form. I don't want to say that the stories are like deconstructed necessarily because that sounds, again, pretentious, and they're not really. But he does kind of like to. It just it's kind of experimental in its way. Like you can follow the shit and, you know, it's not that out there, but he seems very interested in playing with the tropes of horror fiction, playing with just literary tropes, literary formats in general, and I really like that. So I like that each of the stories kind of has its own sort of like thing going on where he was like experimenting with some different kind of like with some different kind of structure. So the second story is called How the Day Runs Down. It's also a zombie story, which I'm not super a fan of, but the reason I dug this one was because essentially what he did was he took the very famous Thornton Wilder play, Our Town, which I actually read in school, and rewrote it as though it was like during a zombie apocalypse, you know what I mean? So he has like the stage manager. If you've ever read the play, there's like a stage manager that's talking about all these things that are happening, and then there's like these vignettes of all the people in the town. And so it's like that, but instead of this being like the little sleepy town of Grover's Corners or whatever, it's basically like a zombie apocalypse. And it's also like a little bit meta because there's like an audience and the audience are like zombies too. It's like, I don't really want to spoil too much about it, but yeah, so that was like a pretty cool story as well, especially if you've read Our Town, which like I said, I did a couple, I read it in school and then I read it again since then. So it's kind of cool to like see that play like through the lens of like a zombie like a zombie apocalypse was actually pretty entertaining. Now the next story, okay, now this next story, it's kind of like in the running with the last story that's in it is for my favorite one. The next story is called Technicolor, and this one actually appeared, if you know anything, like if you're a big horror reader like I am, then you've probably read a like an anthology that's put out by Ellen Datlow, edited by her. She does those Year's Best Horror, you know, she's one of the editors on that. And she puts out, you know, her and her compatriots, they put out like tons and tons of anthologies every year on different themes. So they had done an anthology where you were supposed to write something that was inspired by a Poe story, not like a pastiche, not like write something as though it was a Poe story, but take something that's like a Poe, you know, concept or a Poe story and like do your own thing with it. So Technicolor was written for that, and that's what it first appeared. I think the anthology was just called Poe. I can't remember right now, but it got like a lot of buzz. This story in particular did. And so what John Langan did was he took the story Mask of the Red Death, which he said is his favorite Poe story, and it's mine as well. And I wrote a novel called Red Menace, which actually had it wasn't based on a Poe story, but it did have like a Mask of the Red Death little kind of homage in it. So I was kind of like, oh, I see where you're going with this. I like it. So what this one is, it's basically told from the point of view. A lot of his stories, I guess because he's a professor and he's in academia, a lot of his stories are kind of like based in that situation, in that milieu, if you want to say that, if I'm even saying that right, I don't know. I'm trying to like sound smart, I guess. But yeah, so a lot of his stories are like kind of set in academia. So this story is actually told, this was so good. This story was actually told from the point of view of a professor giving a lecture to a class. And he starts out talking about Mask of the Red Death, and he posits, I mean, this story is just like so well researched and just so, it'll like really make you kind of, when you're reading it, you just kind of like go back and go, wait, is that real? I'm just like, I'm gonna have to look that up. And I saw like some other reviews and stuff. It was like, I totally like looked up like the real shit that he was talking about. And he's like, oh, he just made it up. But you know what I mean? So yeah, Mask of the Red Death supposedly was based on, not based on necessarily, but the thing of his lecture in the story is that Edgar Allan Poe got the idea for the colored rooms, like the suite of rooms in Mask of the Red Death, from this like creepy book that was written by this guy who was maybe like some kind of occult, you know, kind of thing. And it's really, I really liked the description of like this book, and it had like these weird drawings in it that you could only really see like when you shined like the appropriate color light on them and shit like that. So it's like this really complicated kind of like a cult ritual type thing going on, and it's really, really long, and like I said, it's really well researched, and it's so convincing that, like I said, for a second, I was just kind of like, wait, did Edgar Allan Poe really base this on, like, a real guy, like a real occultist or something like that? Like, obviously, I didn't believe in, like, the supernatural kind of elements, but I was like, well, that sounds kind of like, you know, that sounds legit. But then I was like, no, of course not. But it's just, like, a really great story. So, like I said, it's framed like a lecture. So it's like a teacher talking to a class about the history of where Mask of the Red Death came from, and about the history of this occultist and like how Edgar Allan Poe ended up reading about him, stuff like that. So the story is called Technicolor and it's really, really good. So then you have a story called The Wide Carnivorous Sky, which is the title story. Now this one, it's kind, I want to say nominally, this is another thing that I like about him, because I try to do this in my stories as well, is that you take something like one of the, you know, cliches or horror tropes, like, you know, a particular monster, and then you try to, like, do something completely different with it. So this one is nominally a vampire story, but this vampire is kind of more like, it does have some vampire, like, it has a lot of vampire attributes, but it has a lot of differences, too, in the sense that it's nothing like your Anne Rice kind of vampires, where they're all kind of, like, fancy and aristocratic or anything like that. This is much more like, it's intelligent, but it's much more like a predator. Also, he said he wanted to invert the whole thing where, you know, oh, vampires can only come out at night. This one can actually only come out in the daytime. And it basically swoops down from the sky and it lives essentially, I know this sounds weird, but it essentially lives in like this pod, like a coffin-like pod that's like circling the Earth, like in a satellite, like around the Earth. And then it kind of comes down and feeds at various times. And so into that mix, you have a group of soldiers in Iraq who actually kind of see this, like during the Gulf War, and they see this thing and it just like tears the shit. This is a very gory tale. And it just like tears the shit out of them, and they actually all see it. And so it's kind of like them, it kind of jumps back and forth in time with all of the guys, like all the soldiers that knew each other, and you know, them sharing stories about what they saw and figuring out how they're going to destroy it. So that's like a really good story as well, like a really kind of original take like on a vampire story, which I thought was also really cool. And the next one is City of the Dog, which is kind of, it's sort of, I thought it was kind of like a werewolf story, but I think it's more like a ghoul type of story. And this one, he said, was actually a little bit autobiographical in the sense that it's set in the early 90s in Albany, New York, where a lot of his stories are actually set in upstate New York, which is presumably where he lives. So he knows a lot about that. And it's almost kind of like, it's like a like an awkward relationship drama, kind of. It's just kind of like these college students, like the guy, like the main protagonist, and, you know, him and his girlfriend, like his girlfriend cheated on him and he can't get over it. And then he ends up, like through some circumstances, he ends up living with the guy who the girlfriend slept with, who was a friend of hers. And so that's kind of this awkward situation. But then his girlfriend, like, disappears. And it comes to be known that there's like kind of something lurking around like underneath the city that maybe had something to do with her disappearance. So there's that as well. Then we have the weirdest story, the most Lovecraftian one. This one was actually, it's kind of like, this one was first written, he said, for an anthology, and the anthology was supposed to be what would happen to the Earth if, like, the Lovecraftian old ones, like, did what they wanted, like, took over, right? So you had to write a story that was set after that, like, what the world would look like. So this story is called The Shallows, and this is by far the weirdest one, I think, in the sense that it's just this guy who's just like a regular middle-aged guy, and he still lives in his house because apparently, like, you know, Cthulhu and all them like didn't get him. But most everybody is gone, like everything has kind of been blasted out of existence. So it's just kind of like him and this little crab creature that he talks to, and they just kind of like do the rounds of their house and like do gardening and stuff. So it's a very, very bizarre story. And then he can kind of see these weird, like, It's hard to explain. He can see like these kind of like weird curtain type things that he can see into like not necessarily other dimensions, but he can kind of see like other stuff that's going on. So yeah, if you're into Lovecraftian fiction, you probably really, really dig that one. But it's by far the weirdest one. I got that it was Lovecraftian, but I didn't immediately get that it was like after the old ones had like taken over the earth. So I was glad that he kind of like clarified that at the end. I was like, okay, well that makes a lot more sense then. But that's the anthology that was in at first. The next one is actually sort of a werewolf story, kind of a werewolf slasher movie type thing. But again, not really. What he does is he kind of takes these types of things, but then he does other things with them, like makes them metafictions or, plays with the format a little bit, which, like I said, I really like that. I kind of like that experimental kind of thing he's got going on. So it's called The Revel, and it's good because it's kind of like a really good werewolf story in its own right. But it's also kind of like breaking down the tropes of werewolf stories or even slasher movies or horror movies in general. So it's kind of hard to explain, but there's kind of like, it's almost written as though it's a paper on horror movie tropes, but it's still a good werewolf story also. And you know what I mean? So it's kind of like hard to explain, like I said. But a lot of these stories, I know I keep saying that, but a lot of these stories are really hard to explain if you're not reading them, just because again they're so experimental, and he just does kind of like interesting things. So when you say what it's about, it's kind of hard to express what it's about. You have to kind of like read it and like get involved in it. The next story is again is another vignette and was actually written for almost the same reason or a similar reason to the kids one, where he was writing it where everybody decided they were going to write stories about how this real dude like got killed. This was kind of the same situation. This story is called June 1987, Hitchhiking Mr. Norris. And this one, I think, was actually written about a real person, Laird Barron, who's another writer. And I think what happened was all these writers got together and said, to be funny, let's do the same thing. Let's write a story about Laird Barron, who is a real person. And it's just like this, I think it was called The Secret Life of Laird Barron. So it didn't have to be anything dark necessarily, because some of the stories I heard were funny. But you just had to like make up some crazy shit that Laird Barron let happen, like in his life. So John Langan wrote this one, which was essentially about him. The dangers of hitchhiking, him getting picked up by this hitchhiker who was kind of a serial killer, but the serial killer has a much larger mission. Let's put it like that. So again, Laird Barron, the protagonist of this, is actually a real person, and this was again written, to cheer him up or to be funny or whatever. And all these writers wrote one, and they all put it on their blogs for that day, like on the same day. Now, the last story in here, which is a novella, pretty sure, I mean, this one and Technicolor are vying for my favorites. I like them for different reasons. The last one is called Mother of Stone. And this one, man, if you're really into like mythology and particularly like, not necessarily even urban legends, but just urban legends slash myth, like old mythology, then you will really be into this one, because this one is kind of, it's written in the second person, which you don't see much, and the reason you don't see that much is because it's really hard to do without coming off across as like really irritating. But to its credit, this story did not, it didn't like stand out to me at all. It didn't like, it occurred to me when I started reading it, oh, it's in the second person, but it didn't really interfere with my enjoyment of it. I have read some other things that were in second person that just got tedious after a while, but this one absolutely does not. So this one is framed like from the point of view of someone who is doing a paper or thesis on a particular type of mythology. And they became interested in this urban legend, or what they think is an urban legend, going around in upstate New York. And what ended up happening was that there was this place, it was an inn in this town, and while they were digging on the grounds, like they were building it. I can't remember why they were digging. I think they were like expanding it or something like that. And while they were digging, they found this really creepy statue, like kind of like a full-size statue that looked like maybe like ancient Greek or Roman kind of style, but not quite. And it was really, really detailed and like really, really beautifully done. And the statue was of a very, very pregnant woman without a head. And I don't mean that like the statue, oh, the head fell off like the Venus de Milo or something like that. No, it was sculpted to not have a head to start with. So everyone's kind of like wigged out about it. And then everybody got even more wigged out about it when it so happened that a pregnant woman who was driving past the inn one day got into a horrible car accident, which decapitated her. So after that, like this sort of legend started around maybe the statue was cursed or whatever. And then this local woman like kind of bought the statue and put it in the inn, or she, you know, they found it on the ground. So she put it in the dining room of the inn. And people started like getting really weirded out by it. Like it started to bleed like from the neck and all this other stuff. So, I mean, just the thought of that and the way he describes what this statue looked like and the shit that it was doing was like super, super creepy. And like I said, I love all this kind of like mythology stuff. And so you're basically following this researcher who is trying to get to the bottom of, you know, who made this statue? Why is it here? What is it for? You know, all of these crazy stories, like people kept seeing that. Then they started seeing like ghosts of like headless women and shit like that. Like, what is all that about? So they're trying to get to the bottom of it. This was by far like the creepiest story. And between this one and the Poe one, were again, like they, I can't decide which one I like. I think I like this one slightly more just because, even though, because I feel like the Poe one was a little, format-wise, was a little stranger because it was kind of framed through, like, someone lecturing to a class. I don't know. I think I liked them for similar reasons now that I'm thinking about it, because they're both dealing with, like, an investigation where there's, like, a weird thing that needs to be explained, and then you're having somebody, like, go back through time, sort of, and, like, try to get to the, like, try to tie together all these tendrils of, like, where this legend came from or where this story came from or something like that. And I really, really like stories like that. So I think that's why I responded to those two the most. But yeah, those two are probably my favorite. I think the last one's slightly, slightly more just because that, the image of this fucking statue, like a pregnant woman with, like, no head, that bleeds and shit like that, it's just, like, really creepy and disturbing, and I just, like, I really, really liked that a lot. So after that, so you get that, and then there's, like, a little bit of an interview, and then there's writer's notes where he said, you know, which anthology the story was written for, like, what the theme was. Even, well, sometimes what happens is he would get asked to be in an anthology, and he's like, and then, like, I started writing a story, and then I got distracted and wrote something else, and I didn't make the deadline, and so it didn't get in there, you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, okay, I've been there. But yeah, so, but some of them did actually appear in the anthologies that they were supposed to appear in, so it was really good to, like, get the insight as to where he got the ideas for things, you know what I mean? Because I really like that, since I'm a writer as well. So yeah, if you've ever, I can't remember, like I said, I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was that recommended this book to me, but thank you very much, because I really, really did like this a lot, and we'll definitely be looking up some of his other stuff. And I really like, I feel like I don't read as many short story collections as I probably should, because honestly, I really like to write short stories. That's like my preferred medium. But for whatever reason, I don't read as many short story collections as I'd like to. And I don't know why that is, because I actually really do like short story collections. So, you know, it's kind of cool that I got one thrown in there every now and then. But yeah, so if you've read any John Langan, if you've read this book, I think one of his big, more recent books was called The Fisherman. That's because Amazon kept like recommending that to me, so I'll probably get around to that as well. But you know, so I'll definitely be reading some more of this guy's stuff, because I really like his style. Like I said, it's very elegant, and I really, really, I don't know, I just really like the way he describes things, and like his imagination, and the way he plays with different literary forms and tropes and stuff like that. I found that really, I don't know, I just find that really cool, and it kind of lines up with the way I like to approach my own stories as well, so I thought that was kind of awesome. But yeah, so let me know if you've read The Wide Carnivorous Sky, what you thought about it, and that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.